ladies and gentlemen, give him a warm welcome, the one and only Pelly de Hallo. Overdrive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this session where we're going to do all kind of crazy testing. As you can see, the title of the slide here says we're going to replace any .NET method with your delegate, and that's really the idea that I want to transfer today. If you've understood that, you've understood the MOS framework, and it will open the door to a lot of potential in terms of simplifying your life when you're testing your applications. My name is Jonathan Pelly Dialoux, and I'm a senior research software engineer at Microsoft Research in Redmond. And MOS is a work we do in collaboration with Visual Studio. So MOS is an isolation framework for .NET. In a nutshell, it allows you to replace any .NET method with a delegate. We can replace static methods, methods in sealed types, non-virtual methods, and so forth. So whenever you have a dependency in your code, we can go in and change it. And we're going to see why it's critical when you're doing testing. MOS is a Visual Studio power tools. So what does it mean? It's a tool that you can go and download on Visual Studio Gallery right now for free, or you can also download it on MSDN. It's a power tool from Visual Studio, so we're blessed by the Visual Studio division, although this tool comes from Microsoft Research. And you can download it. So that's it for the introduction. Let's go into a little example. So what are we going to try to do today is really understand how we can use the MOS framework to go and deal with hard-to-test code. I mean, code that has a lot of hard-coded dependencies. If you're doing code that reads to database, that calls web services, that does all kind of file system operation, most likely you have something that's hard to test because you have to go and touch the environment. You need a live database to run your code. You need to mount a couple hard drives and maybe to spin up a bunch of machines to go and run your little application. And that's really a burden. And if we have some time, we'll demo Apex for a little bit. Okay, so here's the typical challenge we start with. So this is a little program in C# that checks whether it's the year 2000. If it's the year 2000, then bad things happen. Now, if you want to go and unit test this, usually when you do unit testing, you want to achieve high code coverage. So you want to make sure you go in and you generate a test case that goes and hits this branch. Now, if you're thinking right now how you're going to do that, you're probably going to figure out it's going to be a bit challenging because of this guy. So we're calling daytime now, and we're doing an equality over daytime, which means we have to get precisely at the year 2000 and 0 seconds to get the equality to be true. Now, what is daytime now? Daytime now is really a little manage method that goes and asks the machine what time is it. So we don't really control the machine time. It's just something really hard to change. And you can see this example as being symptomatic of what you find in real-life application that we write today. Highly connected application which go and query services from many different environment-dependent resources, so databases, file system, and so forth. Okay, so how do we deal with that? The idea behind MOS is very simple. What if we could just change what daytime now does? So if I would translate that to sudo C#, so this is not valid C#, as you can see, I would say, I'd like to replace the delegates, so I'd like to replace daytime now, the getter, by a delegate that always returns the year 2000. And if I was able to do that in my test, then I would for sure hit the branch that's for the exception. And I wouldn't have to care about what time it is in my machine because I just don't even call the machine time anymore. So that's the idea behind MOS in isolation. You replace a complicated system by a delegate that does something much simpler. In the context of testing, don't do that in production. Okay, so that feature doesn't exist in C#. Yeah, I've talked to Anders, but I don't think it'll make it in anytime soon in C Sharp. But we have a framework that generates something like this. So what you see is actual code that you can write with moles. So we generate mole types, which start with M. So in this case, M day time. And then we have properties. In this case, now get, which refers to the getter of now. And you can assign delegates. You don't really have to specify types or anything. C Sharp will make sure everything is type safe. But this is the idea. We give you a layer that allows you to replace in an intuitive fashion any method by a delegate. And by doing so, you can now write unit tests that are isolated, they are fast, they are deterministic, they don't require a difficult setup. Okay, so how does it work? So what are the mechanics behind that? So let's take a look at the datetime type. So it's a struct, it lives in mscorelib.dll, which is the DLL that holds the base class libraries, and it lives in the system namespace, and it has this static meta property called now. So we have a tool that goes in and generates what we call mole types. And the naming convention is the mole types live in a subnamespace called .moles, and they start with the letter M. So it's system.moles.mDateTime. Now for every method in the datetime type, we're going to generate a property. So the idea here is there's also a naming convention. We start with the member name, so it's now, and it's a getter, we add get. And now the trick here is the type of that property is a delegate, so it's a function pointer. And that delegate matches the signature of what you're trying to replace. So in this case, when you look at datetime now, it's a method that takes no argument and return datetime. And it's precisely the delegate, the type of that property. So by doing that, we actually have type safety, and C Sharp takes care of the rest. Okay. So these are the lower level mechanisms. Now, how do we inject those detours? How do we replace methods? What happens is we rewrite the methods before they are compiled by the CLR. So we implement what we call a profiler. The profiler gets called by the compiler, so the just-in-time compiler, right before it's about to transform the bytecode into assembly code. And we go in and we add some code. So this is an overview of what datetime now the getter does. So there's all kind of BCL code being executed. But we go in and we add those two lines. And the line says, let's see whether there's a delegate that has been registered by the user. And if so, then go and call that delegate and return. So you could call that a detour, a short circuit. It's fairly simple. Whatever you're going to give us to run, we're going to run instead of the original method. Okay. So those are the mechanics. And I guess that's my last slide. We can just dive for 67 minutes of demos. All right. So we are in Visual Studio 2010. This stuff also worked for 2008. And I'm going to drag and drop my little example here. So in this session, I'll do most of the demos in the same file, in the same method. But you can obviously replace method in different assemblies or assemblies that you don't even own, maybe a third-party assembly or something. But here for the demo and to see everything in the same screen, it's going to be in the same method. Right? But it doesn't really matter where the code lives. Okay, so this is our little scenario. So we want to go and drive the program. Oops, drive the program to hit this branch. I'm using a cert fail so that it shows up in the result details page. Okay, so if I run this with team test, well, nothing is going to happen. It's going to be happy. So we had a passing test. Okay, so let's go in and first generate those mole types. So in order to be able to write this MD time, you first need to go and compile it. So the way you do that is you go into your test project and you add a new item. Let's go and add a new item here. And there is a new template here called moles and stuff for testing. And in this case, you want to, you want to go in and rename that to mscorlib. So it's the name of the assembly that holds datetime. So now what our tool does, and you can see here, you can see that at the bottom, it's basically going through every type in mscorlib and generate for every type of mscorlib a multitype, and for every method in those types, generate a property. So it's spitting out quite some code, then it's going to compile that, and then it's going to add the compiled assembly into your test project. So you need to wait for a while. This assembly will be cached for future calls, so it's just a one-time hit. And now we can go back to our test project, and we can see that we have the .mols file that we added. It also added three items in your project, which is the DLL and also the XML docs. And also, it added the generated DLL to your project references. So that means all the types now that we've created are ready to go and picked up by IntelliSense. Okay, so now we can just use the naming convention to find them. So what we're looking for is mDateTime. So I'm just going to write mDateTime. The IntelliSense button is showing up here. Little blue dialog. So I can go in and add the missing namespace, which is using system.mol. So it matches our little naming convention. Okay, so let's just go and add that. And now I'm going to click on now. I'm going to write now get, and you can see that we have the IntelliSense that tells us, you know, what is available, and we have a now get property, so we're good. And here we're just going to go and write a delegate. So delegate, and what are we going to do? Return new datetime. Yep, 2000. And return, okay. All right. So we've hooked up a delegate that always returned the year 2000. Now, all future calls of datetime now are going to call this delegate. Okay, let's try that. So I'm going to run the test, and now it fails. So let's drill into the failure, and the failure tells me not really what I expected. So it gives me a message. It tells me moles requires test to be instrumented. So remember, we use a runtime instrumentation that requires some setup of the process. So you need to tell us that this test requires moles. Okay. So there is a hint here, yep, you need to cut and paste this attribute. I'm just going to go ahead and do what I'm told and go and paste this. Okay. So if you're familiar with the host type attribute, it's something that existed for a while in MS Test, and it was used for hosting a unit test in ASP.NET, but we implemented our own host type for moles. Okay, so it can just run again. It takes a little bit longer now, and now it fails, but it doesn't fail the right way. Okay, so now the second message we get is that datetime.getNow was not instrumented. The reason that happens is for any type in the BCL, there's a large performance impact in rewriting that. So we try to be lazy and not rewrite too many types of the base class libraries. Any other assembly, we just rewrite it blindly. For the base class library, you need to go and specify type by type which type you want to be instrumented. And again, there is a little hint here. There's a little attribute that you need to add. So here you can see what needs to be fixed. But since we're going to use a bunch of types in this demo, I'm going to cheat a little bit. Just going to add a bunch of annotations here. So it looks like, what's happening? There we go. So it's each attribute basically specifies, yep, you need to instrument, in this case, system.random. All right. So I can go back to my test and hopefully finally hit the little bug. And now we can see that we actually hit the year 2000 bug. So I know it's a big room, but I think it deserves clapping. Maybe I should put the message as clap, and then we get more clap next to it. So this was basically impossible to test without isolation. And now with moles, you can do it, and it's very easy and very deterministic. Okay. So before we go on, let's do a C-sharp Delegates 101. And for some of you who don't know about lambda expressions, let's take you into that wonderful world. So here we have an anonymous method. It's the old way of writing delegates. It's pretty verbose. Okay, so since they introduced link, they also introduced new syntax. So this delegates takes no arguments. So let's maybe write it like this. So what you do is you delete delegates, it's ugly, and then you put this arrow. Right, so that's typical of lambda expression. So it's a method that takes no argument, no argument here, and then it does something here. Okay. Now, the second thing you can do to make it prettier is, well, you notice that we only return something. So there's only one expression in this body. So really, why are we paying the curly brace tax? So let's just remove the curly braces, and we should be happy. In fact, C-sharp, the squigglies are gone, so C-sharp just said it was okay to write this. So this is a notation. This is a way of writing delegates that's pretty compact and pretty useful. And if you're doing link today, or if you do link, you're pretty familiar with it. But hopefully now everybody is on the same boat, and we're going to use that all across the demos today. So I can run again, hopefully get more clapping. See, doop-a-doop-a-doop. Yeah, I did it, okay. So why is this useful? I mean, the example with daytime now is a bit funny. Let's take a look at another example, maybe a bit more realistic. I'm going to drag this. All right, so here's an example where I'm reading from a file, and I'm going to display the output of the file. As you can see, the file name is a bit funny. I can tell you I don't have this file name on my machine. And if I run this right now, it's going to fail, telling me, well, question mark doesn't exist, right? So we go here, illegal character pass. Oh, it's even better. Okay, so that's not good. Okay, so but I don't care about that. I want to isolate from the file system. So the same idea applies now. We already have the mole types for MS Corelib, so actually we have M files somewhere. So I'm just going to write M file, then press Control dot. IntelliSense would tell me which namespace is missing, and then I'm looking for readable text. So I'm just going to type readable. Zoom in here. Go back. Read all text. Okay. And now there's three methods. There is readable text string, readable text string encoding, and readable text internal readable text string encoding. Okay. So this is how we deal with overloads in our naming convention. We just encode the argument types in the name of the properties. So you can figure out what you want to use when you're trying to replace methods. The second thing that's interesting here is if the method is internal, we can still replace it, as long as all the types on the signature are public or visible. So you can also go and replace private methods in your code. So you have a lot of control there. If you're not sure about what the method does, there is also IntelliSense that shows up here. That tells you it sets the mole of file readable text that takes a string. Okay, so that's actually the one we want. Go switch back here. So it takes a file name. If there's only one argument, you don't need to put parentheses. And then we're going to return clap now. Okay, great. Everybody's happy. I can go and run the test. And yep. Wow, it's working. Cool. Okay, so we could deal with the file system. So that was, those two examples were replacing simple static methods inside of the BCL. Now, there's a number of other things you can do in .NET, for example, instance methods, or generic methods, or constructors, and so forth. And we can deal with that. So I'm going to go and show you more demos about it and show you more about the breadth of the framework. The message that I really want you to remember is you can't replace any .NET method with a delegate. So I'm going to tell it like 20 times during the talk. So before I move on, I just want to demo for 2 seconds PEX. So I'm just going to bring back my little test case maybe here. Should have kept it. So instead of adding the... That wasn't good. Okay. Let's keep the PEX demo because it seems that I don't have... Let's add the reference. Okay. I need to delete the file it created for me. I don't want that. Okay. So one of the issue in the test case is that we needed to specify the date in our testing. So we had to write now get return the year 2000. In this case, it's pretty obvious because everything fits in the same screen. But in reality, you don't really know which inputs are interesting when you send it into your application. How do you achieve high code coverage? PEX is a tool that allows you to parameterize your test case. It allows you to say, I want my code to never crash, ever, right? And you let PEX pick values to drive your program in different paths. Now, when I right-click and run PEX, so I'm gonna right-click and run PEX, which is a different button. PEX is going to show me if my code builds. Oh, that added an empty space for me. Okay. Building again. Okay. Just run PEX again. And the PEX demo is almost finished. PEX is going to run the code, start with the simplest date time possible, which is the year one, 1st of January. And then it's going to figure out that, yes, you need to send a year 2000 to achieve a higher code coverage. There's a branch in your code that requires this value to be the year 2000. And the results show up here. So let's show that here. Nope. I want to get here. Okay. So you have an input-output table where time has been mapped to this column. Every row in this column is a test case, and you can see that on the first try, we tried the simplest date time, which is default date time. And then the second try, we tried actually the one we were interested in, which is the year 2000. The good thing about isolating your code is that it enables PEX. PEX will be much smarter about reasoning about your code. So since it's not a demo about PEX, I'm just going to stop here and go back to the moles. But if you go to our website, you can also take a look at PEX. And PEX also contains the moles framework. All right. So in this example, everything was easy because we only had a static method. So I'm just going to rewrite this. I'm going to say I'm going to get a stream now. There's many ways to read files in .NET. And now I'm going to say C equals stream read to end. Okay. And now I want to test this. Right? Obviously, this doesn't apply. And if I run this right now, it's going to fail. Okay. So there's two challenges. First challenge, this is a constructor. We need to go and inject ourselves into the constructor. How do we do that? Second challenge, this is an instance method. Oops, without IntelliSense. This is an instance method. How do we go and replace instance methods? So let's take a look at constructors. Now, if I've repeated it enough so far, you know that we can replace any .NET method with a delegate, right? So what is a constructor? It's a method, right, somewhere. So we're going to replace the constructor of stream reader by something. And that's the way you're going to go and hook yourself into new objects. So we're going to do mStream reader. And then for every constructor in stream reader, there is a static method defined on that type. And we're looking for the one that takes constructor and string. So I'm just going to go back. Constructor string. Okay, that's the one. It receives a stream reader instance and whatever file name I give it. Okay. That instance is a bit special. That instance is an uninitialized runtime instance. It means the runtime has just created that instance, but it hasn't run any constructor in it. It's full of zeros, right? And what we're going to do is we're not going to run the original constructor. We're just going to give it to an instance of mStream Reader, basically giving the control of that object to moles. And moles will make sure it's forbidden to call any method at an instance. Whenever you're going to try to call something on that instance of the stream reader, it's going to throw an exception, telling you you're not allowed to do that. Okay, so let's try that. Yep. Oh, I deleted tests, delete pex tests. Let's skip that, try again. All right, so what I expect to see here is a failure of the test case, and I expect to see the message telling me, no, no, you can't do that. Okay, and it's almost that. Here you can see stream reader read to n was not moled. Okay, so because this object wasn't initialized, it's not really ready to be used with the real implementation, so we make sure this doesn't happen. You have to go and provide a fake implementation for every instance method. Now, so far, I haven't shown you that we can actually debug this. So maybe you're really confused about this constructor business. I mean, it's the first time you see it, it's kind of funny. So how do I go and understand what moles is doing? You can do like you do on every application. You put a breakpoint, and then you just go and debug and step through the code. So here I'm going to debug and see how the redirection happened. Let's stop this. Okay, so I'm going to press F11 here. And as you can see, we jumped inside of our detour. And if we look at the stack trace, we can see that we were in the unit test, and we entered the constructor of stream reader, and then we took our little shortcut. So remember how we instrumented the methods? We entered the method, we looked whether there was a delegate registered, and then we executed it. So we are inside of our little delegate, which is pretty neat. And I think I can also see, and it's a fully debuggable session, so I can actually see stuff, change, do all the things I can do with a debugger. And I continue running, and then it crashes. Great. Okay, so moles allow you to also debug the code. They're fully debuggable for a good reason. C# does a pretty good job of generating nice debuggable code, and we only use delegates. Okay. So now that we've hooked ourselves into the constructor, the next step is to replace the readN method. And what we're going to do is use the object initializer syntax here, and we're just going to say readN, readToN, here we go, equals superclaps now. Hopefully this works. All right. And now I'm going to run again. And if everything goes well, the room should be clapping like crazy in a couple seconds. Yes! So you can go deep in the runtime, and you can change things that you'd never had the chance to do. So if you have to code against code that you didn't write, that was poorly componentized, you can deal with that, right? All right. Okay, so this is all fine. Let's go back. So we've seen instance methods. We've done the constructor. Just for fun, I'm going to show you a trick here. So I want to make sure that read to end is called. So how do I do that? So I'd like to assert, so let's say I have a Boolean here, called, equals false, and now I have to assert somewhere at the end that called was true. Now how do I pass this local to my delegates so that it gets updated when I do my call to the readAll and delegates? So how do I do that? Well, it turns out that it's fairly easy, because C# does all the job for you. You just say called equals true in the delegates. And that's it. So just zoom out. Here we have, so you can see that we can actually define locals in the main scope, observe all kind of side effects in the delegates, and then assert that at the end of the test. So maybe I'm just going to assert fail. And no, let's do this. If called, fail. So if called is true, we should get some clapping. Okay, it's almost not funny anymore. Okay, so I'm going to stop that. All right, so C# is our API. You can do a lot with C#, and you have those delegates. You can do whatever you want in them. We're not restraining you for doing whatever you want. So your imagination is the limit. There's barely no API for moles. It's just replacing methods with delegates. And inside of them, you can do whatever you want. All right, so this was a fun example. Let's move on to the next one. And the next example shows something a bit more tricky. So if you're familiar with ASP.NET, you probably have seen the famous HTTP context.current, which makes testability kind of hard because this property returns or throws, I'm not sure what it does, when you're outside of IIS. So you always need to, if your code depends on that, then you need to run your unit test in IIS, and it's just painful. Okay, so with moles, we can actually deal with that. And then the purpose of this example is that, well, we get an interface. So the problem with interfaces is that, well, there's no method body to rewrite because it's abstract. So how do we deal with that? So moles not only generate special types for methods that have a body, but we also generate implementation of interfaces so that you can just use them at test time. So let's go and write the isolation code. So first we need moles for system.web. So let me show you another trick. We go to the reference, and then what I'm simply going to do is right-click and say add moles assembly. That's usually the way you're going to do it in the future, and this is going to basically add the file to your project. I couldn't do that for MS Corelib because it doesn't show up in the list. Otherwise, I would have done it, of course. So it's going in and compiling all those types, and then after a couple seconds, it's going to add it to the project. So what we're going to do, I have to do here is first replace current, then have current return something that implements I principle, and then implement is in role. And then we should have the output that you're expecting here, which is that we show in role. Okay. And again, as you can see in the demos, we cache those precompiled assemblies so that you don't have to spend 2 minutes on every build waiting for them, especially in demos. All right. Okay, so let's use assert fail, which is nice, looks better. Fail. Okay, so let's get started. So now you're all experts, you should be able to do that in the dark. We return a new MHTTP context. Okay, so why do we do that? We need an instance of HTTP context. Of course, this type is sealed. The constructor are private, I guess, so we cannot really instantiate it. So what moles does, it creates an uninitialized runtime instance for you that's ready to go. So if I click on .instance, I can see that there's a property from my mole type that returns an HTTP context. So it returns this special instance for which you cannot call any method. It will throw an exception. Okay, so I got my instance, and I use object initializers, and I'm gonna do user get, and now I need something that implements I principle. So for interfaces and abstract method and so forth, we generate what we call stub type. They are implementation of the interface that do the same trick as we do when we inject code. You get a delegate for every method if you assign it. So you get a property for every method. If you assign it, we'll run your delegate. So the naming convention is S. So it's going to be SI principle. I should do new. All right. And then inside of that, I have the same experience. I can go and find isInRoll that takes a string. And here I'm going to say role equals admin. Right. I think that's it. It compiles. So what we're seeing here is that you can mix and match moles, which work for concrete types, but also use, if you have interfaces, you can also use the same approach. The benefit of using stubs is they don't require runtime rewriting. So you can actually get away without using the host type. All right, so I can just run this. And what I expect is a nice message telling me that very impressive message telling me, yes, you are in the role. All right, so anyone has been doing testing on HTTP context? .current, anyone suffered from that? Okay. Clapping? No clapping. Okay. Cool. So we can deal with pretty much anything. All right. Let's take a look at another trick. So this was showing dealing with interfaces, and it also works with abstract methods. We generate stub types for that. Let's do something really, really dangerous. So don't do that at home. So I run VS as an admin. So that could be pretty dangerous. And I wouldn't want to have that happen to me. So I'm going to say to moles, behave as not implemented. So I'm basically telling moles, look, you're not allowed to call any method on directory. And whenever this happens anywhere in the code, you're going to throw an exception, right? We call that a trap. So if you know the exit point to the environments of your application, you can put a list of those traps and make sure your code never hits the network, never hits the database or something like that. You don't have to actually physically detach the cable to get that happening. Okay, so everybody holds his breath. The demo might be, the talk might end soon if I screwed up my demo. Still running, okay. And we got it. That was like a very, very dangerous stunt. I tried it just before the talk, and I had put c.temp just to make sure if I screwed up, and I actually screwed up, and my temp directory was gone. So I'm glad my computer is still alive right now. But it shows you the idea of traps. So traps are very interesting. If you do a SharePoint development, who does SharePoint development here? Okay, it's a bunch of people here. You know that there's a type called SP site. That's usually your entry point to SharePoint, or another one called SP context. But there's a limited number of those. So you can go and say, yep, you're not allowed to call SP site. And then basically gives you the entry point to starting isolating your application. Right, so the traps are kind of a neat trick. Okay. So let's move on to the very, very fun stuff. Where are we? All right. Oh, I need to first. Okay, so this was all a little example. And I guess the previous talk was talking about entity framework, REI, and stuff like that. So let's try to test some link to SQL code. Because usually link to SQL calls to goes out to SQL, which is an issue when you're trying to do unit testing. So I'm going to go and add a new link to SQL file here. There we go. Call it repo. There we go. Here, just add a simple table called users. And add a name property. All right. Okay, so we got all the link to SQL stuff happening. Of course, I don't have any database. And then I have some code that does something on it. Okay, so what does the code do? I called it users. Users. Okay, it builds. Okay, so what do we do? We do something pretty simple. We're just trying to display the usernames. But unfortunately, we use a table of user. Okay, so how do I go and test that? Well, it's easy. I'm just going to do a table and put stuff in it. So I'm going to do table, new table, users. And then this is the experience when you're trying to instantiate a table. There's no public constructors. So you have to go through the data context to get a table. That means you have to hit the SQL database, which is not really what you want to do in unit testing. All right, so this seems like a perfect scenario for moles. So how are we going to deal with that? Well, first, we need that M table type. So I'm just going to go and add a moles assembly here. I think system.data.link is fairly small, so it should happen faster. There we go. So I'm going to go and say, yep, I want an M table. And resolve the namespace. And then send that table into application. And I can go and run that. What I expect to happen is whenever I try to enumerate my table, it's going to tell me, nope, you have to mold the getEnumerator method. Right? So this is what happens here. Look, you need to tell us what it means to enumerate the table. So when you do a for each, it calls this getEnumerator method, and then it calls moveNext on it over and over again. OK, so how do we deal with collections? Collections are kind of critical in computer science. So how do we make it easy for you to deal with collection? Well, it's kind of easy. I know I can use list, because list I use every day. So I'm just going to do list of users. Yep. And I'm going to initialize that guy with one new user. Pelly. OK. And then what do I do? I just say table.getEnumerator equals users.getEnumerator. Aha! So now whenever I'm enumerating the table, I'm actually redirecting the enumeration to the list. So you can do that for any custom data type that looks like a collection. You just point it back to a list. I don't think I use assert fail, so it's not going to be very impressive, but yes, it worked. So we successfully tested some piece of code that rely on link to SQL, and I don't have a SQL machine. I don't have SQL installed on this machine. Okay, so that means we can nicely deal with collections. Now, what happened here is we call the public getEnumerator method. But of course, because getEnumerator is part of an interface called enumerable of T, there's actually a private interface implementation method. And if you rewrite this code like this, taking an IEnumerable, now what's going to happen is, it doesn't like it for some reason. What did I do? Oh. Instance. Okay, so what happened here? Okay, let's talk about that. The M table type has an implicit cast to a table of users, but it doesn't have an implicit cast to I enumerable of users. So when this happens, you need to explicitly fetch the runtime instance using the instance property. Okay, so now I want to run this. And what's going to happen is we're actually going to call another method. And we didn't redirect that method. And the other method has a funny name, if you look at it more closely. Table.system.collection.generic, blah, 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 getEnumerator. That's the private interface implementation method. And we need to go and redirect that. But unfortunately, it's private. I don't think I generate anything for it. So the way you deal with interfaces and implementation of interfaces is quite elegant. You tell at once bind all the implementation of IEnumerable and redirect that to all the implementation of IEnumerable in users. So whenever you're going to call something from IEnumerable, it's going to be redirected to the user's list, right? And you can see the signature here takes an I, so we're going to use the IEnumerable of users. So whenever you're going to call a private implementation there, it's going to be redirected automatically. And this works for any interface, not just collections. So now I can run my test. What I hope to see is actually going through the collection. And it's happy. And in fact, we got my name there. So you're not impressed at all. I can see that. So let's put link into the mix, because when we do link to SQL, we actually like to write link stuff. For each is so old-fashioned. Okay. So let's make it a link query. All right. So what we're going to do, we're going to bring back the table. And then here we're going to say query equals from user in users. And I'm going to make it fun. I'm going to say user.name equals foo. Select user. And now I'm going to print those guys out. Or maybe I say query. Okay, so that's a simple link query. And it's linked to SQL. So there's going to be some SQL being generated normally and going to the SQL server and so forth. So how do we deal with that? Okay, so it's link is based on this iQueryable interface. So what we're going to do is just basically pass here an askQueryable. So we're going to turn our list into a queryable thing, and then we're going to pass it in and see what happens. So whenever the link to SQL API is going to ask for the link provider, it's going to get linked to object. So we just replaced link to SQL by link to object in one line of code. And now, as you can see, my name doesn't show up anymore. And it doesn't show up because I don't match the criteria of my query. I need a foo user. So let's add a foo user here. All right. And run again. Woohoo! Yeah, I think that deserves a clap. Okay, so what does it mean? It means that you can use link to SQL, link to SharePoint, link to all the link providers that Bart DeSmet wrote in the last couple of years. And you can replace that with link to object. So you can have in-memory data that you use for testing, and it kind of works the same way. You capture the semantics of your workloads and so forth. The only thing you're gonna miss is the differences between the different implementation of link. Usually, when you look at link to SQL, you cannot use everything in there. You cannot use lambda expressions, or some string methods are not supported. And you won't see that when you do this kind of testing, because link to object supports anything. So you still need to do integration testing. But as far as development, you don't need to actually get a database. And you still get the meaning of what your where clause are doing, because link to SQL is link to object is implementing that. Okay. I think that was, let's see, was the same example. Okay, so this was a brief overview of what you can do with moles. By now, you know what I'm going to tell you. You can replace anything with your delegate. That means at unit testing time, whenever you have a hard-coded dependency, you can go and replace it. I'm not saying you should write spaghetti code that's not well componentized. I'm just giving you now you can do. I'm just telling you you can do it. Now it's up to you to write software the way you want it. Okay, so this was a bunch of small examples, and for the people who do SharePoint, they'll be very happy. For the people who don't do SharePoint, you'll know what you're missing. I'm going to show you a full-blown example of how you use moles on a very simple piece of SharePoint code. So it's more like an end-to-end example here. For the people who are not familiar with SharePoint, don't worry about it. I'll drive you through every step of. I'm actually not familiar at all with SharePoint 2. I just look at the bytecode. All right, so this is an event receiver. It gets called by SharePoint whenever you update an item. So the items are those little rows in the list. You get this context type that tells you which item was clicked or updated. And then in this case, what we want to do is take what it's in content and put it in the title. So our spec is the item gets updated, you take the content, you put it in the title, and you're done. Okay, we want to test that. So I go here, and I have my unit test ready. So I've created my receiver, and I'm calling null. So I want to make it more interesting. Let's get started. So I need a properties. So I'm just going to do new SP item event properties. And here we go. There's no public constructors. In fact, the type is sealed. So we definitely need moles here. Right. Okay. So I've already pre-generated the moles DLL for SharePoint. So we can just go ahead and use it. So I'm just going to do M. Add the missing namespace and close the parentheses here. Okay, so now we can pass properties inside of here. The second thing, and I guess I can start. I'll do the loop faster. Let's do it for the first test. I can just go and run. What's going to happen is on the first call on this instance, you're going to get an exception tell you, no, you need to go and replace that method. So if we go and take a look at the exception, oh, it tells me, oh, forgot the host type. Yep. All right. Let's copy this. Add it. All right. Okay. And let's run again. And just to make sure, I don't have SharePoint installed on my machine. Okay, and now it's telling me what I expected, which is that I didn't replace the property that calls the list item. So if we go back to the code, we can see that, yep, this is the first call that we do. We're fetching that property. So now that we're all experts in doing moles, we can actually have fun and start writing that stuff. So here we go and return and again, this is the same idea. Oh, I need a list item. Easy, I'm just going to create it. Nope, I can't. Okay, let's use a mole. Okay. And then here we're gonna have the two indexers here are going to be called. And the indexer are called item, usually. So you could run pex and it will tell you the name. It's just going to do it faster here. So name. Okay, so this is the method that we use to replace getting a value. So what I'm going to do here is ensure that, well, I'm calling it on the right. Well, I should do the other way. I'm calling on the content field, okay? And then I'm returning something. Nope. And that something is something I'm going to define here, so we can do that. Okay, clapping is not funny anymore. Okay, so I can do that. One thing that's really interesting here is I wrote the assert. I could simply use assertions. This is a delegate, this is C#, you can do whatever you want. So you can actually use all the tools that you have and are used to use. In this case, I just asserted that the field name should be equal to content. And then the next step is to write the setter. So to receive the field name and the value, and then we do something with it. And what I'm going to do is assert the field name. Seems like a good idea. And then maybe assert that it's equal to content. Seems like a good idea too. Okay, so now I can run my test. What I hope to see is a green light to get into the green feeling of unit testing. And in fact, it passed. So I don't have SharePoint installed. I didn't have to launch everything. I could have a nice reactive experience of development in order to test this. And replace SharePoint by any hard-to-test infrastructure you're building on. Okay, so one thing that's interesting in this test case is, well, in a sense, the question is, well, we're done with testing. I'm kind of moving away from moles here, but what I'm going to do is inject a bug. Whoops, that's not good. But wait, I have a test suite and it passes, so I can just check that I didn't break the code. And the unit test still passed, so it must be good, right? But of course, not good. So the problem here is, this method never got called because it's a setter and we removed it. Okay. So what we need to do is go and use this trick of observing stuff. So I'm going to go and say title equal null here, remove the assert, just store it, and now put the assert back saying, yep, content equal should be equal to content. Okay, so that was quick. You can define locals in the global scope, observe state side effects in the delegates, and then use that to assert some properties here. Okay, let's right click and run. Now what I expect if my test is correct is actually to have a test failure and exactly what I wanted. Clapping is not funny, null is funny. Okay, still works. Okay. Right, so I can go and fix the application. Okay, so I have a test case now that passes. It doesn't require to run SharePoint. We're happy. Unfortunately, not so much. And here's why mock testing is painful. Let's say I'm the new guy in the team. I know everything better than everyone, and it's like, no, that's not how you do it. So in SharePoint, you have list that holds list items. So it's always better to go through the list. Always. All right. List item ID. Okay, so if you're not familiar with SharePoint, what I did is I went up in the tree, fetched the list, and then asked the list, give me the item that matches the ID. It's slightly less efficient, but conceptually and functionally exactly the same. It should have the same behavior. And because we have a great test suite, I'm just going to go and run my unit test to make sure I didn't screw up. After all, that's why we have unit testing. Great, so it's running, and it's telling me that I broke the implementation. And the reason why is that getList was not mulled. So here we go. This is the dark side of mocking. Because we've encoded the protocol of methods that happen in your implementation, whenever you do the slightest refactoring, your test cases are going to break. They're very brittle. And here you could see we did a change that was benign, and then our test case broke. And if we had 50 test cases would break, right? So how do we deal with that? Anybody has faced that when we're doing unit testing? Yep, there's some hands raising. Okay, so that's a pretty big problem, and it's not specific to our framework. Any mock framework has this issue. So our idea with moles is we will provide you a way to define state. We'll provide you a way to write test case that take some state from the initial states, you run your code, and then you're going to assert the final state. The way you move from one state to another is irrelevant. That's the implementation. It takes you much closer to integration testing without having to pay for integration testing. So what do I mean by that? If you download our tools and you unzip the thing called behaviors, you'll find a bunch of projects. You can see here, Microsoft.SharePoint.Behaviors. There's a bunch of them for the registry, the event log, and so forth. And you can behave types. Behaviors are like a nicely refactored set of moles. So whenever you redirect stuff and you give it a new meaning, you can refactor it into a behave type. So for example, if we go to the behave type of list, it's going to give you an ID. It instantiates an MSP list, and then it has a list of replacements of the method I'm using in my application. What does it mean to fetch the ID? What does it mean to fetch the title? What does it mean to go and fetch the default view URL? So there's some logic there. It's much simpler than SharePoint kind of models it. So it's kind of entering the state of modeling, but it's just refactoring here. And what is ID? ID is a special kind of value. It's called a behave value. The idea behind behave value, it's state that is undefined. So when you access state that you haven't defined, it's going to throw an exception. It's going to tell you, I don't know what to return here. So it's an integer that doesn't know what it is until you set it. And the idea is you test against state, so you're going to have to decide, define all the state you think you need in the test. Whenever you go out of that, we're going to tell you. Okay, so how do we use this? So let's go into the interesting stuff. Let's delete all this ugly thing. We don't need a title anymore. And I need a properties. Okay. So before I'm going to go and write my code, I'm just going to write in some comments what I expect to get. So I want my initial state, which is a list with two fields, content, title, you can make it bigger. And then I need with an item, that has content, equals content, okay. And then I run my code. And then I'm going to assert, make sure that the title is equal to content. And now we can translate this story into code. So let's go ahead and try that into code. Just move this here. Okay, let's start with a list. So all these types started with B. So I'm going to do BSP list. And then I'm going to say list.fields. We have some new fields. Some new, sorry about that. Try to get it back. We have some new collections. They have some weird name methods called set all. Collections, we have also behave collection, and they are undefined in what you create a new collection, which is behave, and you don't know how many elements you have in there because you don't know. It's testing. So in this case, I'm restricting the testing to say, yep, I have two fields, and they're called content and title. Then I need an item. It's going to be a BSP list item. I'm going to say, yep, the list has only one item. Okay. And then I'm going to set the values in that item. Set all. So it's going to be content and null. I don't care about the title right now. All right. And then I'm going to wrap this up into a properties. So an SP, BSP item, event properties, and then attach the item in there. Right. As you can see, we've refactored all the lambda expressions in those little types, so we don't have to do all this lambda business. Now it's much clearer, much more concise. You know, the test case fits in a page or fits in a huge screen back there. Properties. Okay. And then at the end, I'm just going to assert that my title has been set. So that content is equal to items. Items dot values. What's the problem? Item dot values, and then index one, which is the index of the title. Okay, so I wrote a state-to-state test that didn't specify which method of SharePoint I was expecting to call or anything like that. Now, what I expect is a green light. Actually, I expect a failing test now. And I told you about these behave values. I told you that you're defining states, and whenever you access state that is unknown, we're going to throw an exception. Now it's telling me a value for item.id is missing. And in fact, so why is that? If you click on the stack trace, nope, it's wrong. Where do I have to go? Here. Stack trace is a bit screwed up. But this is the issue. We fetch first the list item ID, and I'm missing that. So I'm going to go back to my test. And I'm going to say item.id equals 0. I'm setting that state. And then I'm running again. And I have all those redirection about SharePoint already set up. I've written that. And I can reuse that all over my test. And now my test is passing. So I didn't have to write lambdas, and I have something that is much more robust. In fact, I do a code review, and I say, no, this is really not a great idea. Let's make it the right way. And I'm going to use my test case to make sure I didn't screw up. Now, because the behave types know what it means to fetch the list item or the list item priority or anything like that, well, I don't have to go and fix them. Or maybe I go and fix them once and for all. In this case, I change the methods I was calling, and still my test case passed. So this is the story for behave types. And we think it's really a game changer. It's very exciting. You can see it as just a nice way to refactor all the isolation that you produced. The nice thing about SharePoint is that everybody's running the same SharePoint framework, so everybody can benefit from that. But you can use this technique to write state for any platform you're coding against, right? And it gives you much clearer isolated tests, and which are much more robust. Okay, so I think I'm out of demo, guys. I had my final slide just to make sure that the message went through. I must have said it 20 times. So you can go and replace anything you want now, even if it's static or in sealed types. So I still have 8 minutes. And I know it's hard to get questions, but if you have questions, I'm going to take them now. Yep, we have one question. So the question is that this works with C#. The answer is this works with all languages. The rewriting works at the bytecode level, and then we also compile the assemblies. So it's just a DLL that you add as a reference maybe to your VB project or whatever language you're using. So, of course, I did only demos in C# now. Yep, another question. So the question is, what does the generator do with optional arguments? So I'm not quite sure. I think optional arguments probably end up being multiple methods. Or from the C# point of view, I think it's only a single method, and then maybe C# does some magic. But the answer is we haven't looked at it yet. Another question here. Yes, so we can definitely test events. Events is very elegant. We just expose the delegate. So you just put whatever you want in that event, and then it gets called by the...
Can I test if the event was actually fired?
Well, since you can replace the event by whatever you want, you can also attach to it and observe that it's created. So because we're built on top of delegates, actually event was the most natural thing to support. I'm taking one more question here. So the question is it possible to use moles outside of the test environment? The answer is yes, and then the next sentence is don't do this, right? Moles introduces performance hit, but also you have no security if you use moles. You know, think about the method called is user authenticated. Well, you can go in and replace that by something that returns always true. So never, ever, ever use moles in production, right? I hope this is clear. I'm scared now. I have another question here. So the question is, why do we do this funny naming convention for the parameters, right? So we mangle the parameter types. The reason is there's no overloading for properties. So those are properties. It allows us to use the object initializer syntax. It's pretty slick. But then again, we don't have overloading like we have usually. So that's really the reason to do that. If you're not happy with the way we've exposed this, there's actually a lower level API that is untyped where you can actually go and set your delegates without having these delegates. So for example, the bind method is built on this API. The bind just does a batch replace. And also there's a feature I haven't shown. Maybe it's we have some minutes, so I'm just going to do that. Do date time. It is possible to change the behavior. So by default, we throw an exception. But what you can do, it's going to be a quick demo, is actually give a default behavior to method call. So here I'm going to say mDateTime.behavior, and we have a list of behaviors. And I'm going to use the one that always returns the default value. So instead of throwing, it's going to return the year one. So of course, that's not going to be impressing, but let's do date time now. Let's do a bunch of those. Okay. It's going to be very, very quick, you're going to see, because it's always going to be the same date. So, you see, always the same date. And the reason is, what happens in date time is, you call the method, no user delegate is registered, and then you go and call the fallback behavior. And the fallback behavior is an interface. Let's go in the definition of this. It implements the iMole behavior. And the iMole behavior is implements a single method that says try get mole method. Can I change this? No, I can't. Okay. It gets a method and it returns a delegate. So here you go, you can do all kinds of crazy stuff to all methods in your system. You get notified the first time a method is called, and you can do something with it. So what we implemented was the default value, the fall through scenario, the not implemented scenario, which are the default ones. So that was one more demo. Still have 2 minutes, so I'm taking more questions if you want to, or we can do more. We can make random not random. Or you have one more question there. Oh, excellent question. So where do you get moles, and what's the license, and blah, blah, blah. I don't have internet. Maybe I have internet. But the answer is, yes, you can download moles on Visual Studio Gallery for free. You don't need an MSDN subscription. If you want to get PEX, you need an MSDN subscription. If you search on the web for PEX and moles and download, you should fall on it. But yeah, you can just go and download it. Yes? So the question is it compatible with the Silverlight CLR? The answer is, currently we don't support Silverlight. In the future, we're looking at being able to run Silverlight code on the desktop using moles, but it's not really ready yet. And of course, everybody's thinking the phone, but we haven't got anything that's really ready for consumption. So the same goes for the compact framework. It won't work for that. So currently it only supports the desktop CLR. 2.0, 3.5, 4.0. More questions? Still have 50 seconds. So I think I'm done. Thank you for attending today. We have forums. Just ask questions. And you can clap now.